A few mornings ago, this past week, early one morning, Pastor Melody awakened and said to Kristen, "I just had the most incredible dream. In my dream, on Christmas Day, you gave me a brand new Lexus Sport Coupe. What do you think my dream means?" Kristen smiled coyly and said, "You'll have to wait to Christmas to find out." So this morning, bright and early, Melody raced to the Christmas tree, tore open the package that Kristen had left for her under the tree, fully expecting to find a key fob for a brand new Lexus, when instead she found a book entitled The Meaning of Dreams by Jonathan Winson. Not exactly what she expected. And okay, maybe that didn't happen, but it could have happened, right? As I was driving into church this past week, one morning I was listening to XM radio. People were calling into a program to share favorite memories from Christmas. A dad called and told about how when his son was 5 years old, all his boy wanted for Christmas that year was a drum set. And so come Christmas morning, his little boy races to the Christmas tree, tears open all the presents that Santa Claus had left there, and no drum set. Dad said, I could see the disappointment in his eyes. A few minutes later, Dad said, "You know, it's a fairly nice day outside for Christmas. Why don't you go outside and play? But go outside through the basement door, please." Little boy walks down to the basement, glum, dejected, and then lets out this scream, because Santa Claus had set up the drum set in the basement. He said his boy came racing back up the steps, electrified with excitement. He had his drum set. All across the globe today, hundreds of millions of people have been making their way to the Christmas tree to open the presents that have been left there. Gift-giving and Christmas, the two, just seem to go together like hand and glove. But have you ever wondered, where did that originate? Where does that tradition of giving gifts on Christmas come from? Actually, two primary sources, one biblical and one cultural. First, let's look at the biblical source from our scripture reading today. Matthew chapter 2, verse 1 tells us, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who's been born king of the Jews?" That term, wise men, is actually a euphemism, if you will. It seems that back in the 1600s, when the translators of the King James Bible were at work, they apparently were not comfortable being literal in the translation of the Greek word that is used there. Magos is the word, a word that literally means astrologers, as in stargazers. We're not talking about astronomers, as in scientists who study the heavens. We're talking about the kind of people who believe that by studying the patterns of the stars, you can discern divine messages. And so these stargazers, who, the way the story is told, apparently lived somewhere in the area of Babylon, apparently looked up into the sky and saw a new star. Back then, it was common for astrologers to believe that a new star would herald the birth of a brand new ruler. And so when these stargazers in Babylon saw that star in the west toward Israel, they must have rushed to their sacred libraries, looking through the prophecies they had there. Remember, the Israelites had been in captivity in Babylon, and apparently they found the old Hebrew prophecy from Numbers chapter 24, verse 17, that says, "A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel." In other words, a great ruler will someday be born in Israel, and the allusion here is to a star. And so, wise men, magos, stargazers from the east made their way toward Israel, and when they found the baby, the newborn king, we're told in verse 11, they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. and ever since, followers of Jesus, in imitation of the wise men, in honor and celebration of Jesus, have been giving and receiving gifts on Christmas. Ah, but where does the Santa Claus part come from? Actually, that goes all the way back to the 4th century, when another child was born. A child named Nicholas was born to wealthy parents, but those wealthy parents ended up dying in an epidemic and leaving their son Nicholas a vast fortune. Nicholas would ultimately be appointed Bishop of Myra, located in what today we would call Turkey. And as Bishop of Myra, he devoted his life, the rest of his life, to giving away his vast fortune. He had a soft spot in his heart, especially for children. Much of his charity was directed at children. And so, ultimately, he would become known as the patron saint of children everywhere, Saint Nicholas. As the story is told, there came a point in time when Saint Nicholas became aware of 3 little girls born into an impoverished family, a desperately poor family. Nicholas was worried that the father of the family wouldn't have the resources to provide dowries for his daughters to be married. In those patriarchal cultures of the time, if a girl could not find a partner in marriage, that was difficult because the men back then were the breadwinners in that culture. And so that meant once her father died, these 3 girls would be in desperate straits. Nicholas wanted to make a difference, but he wanted to do it anonymously. And so when the first daughter came of marriageable age, he filled a little bag with gold coins, and late at night, as the family slept, he tossed that gold bag of gold coins through their open window. As the next 2 daughters came of marrying age, he repeated the same process. As the story is told, those bags of gold coins each fell into stockings that the daughters had hung by the chimney by night to dry their socks. And ever since, children across the globe have been hanging their stockings by fireplaces or wherever they can on Christmas Eve, hoping that one of those magical anonymous gifts from Saint Nicholas would make their way to them. Saint Nicholas, patron saint of children everywhere. The Greek name Saint Nicholas made its way across Europe, ultimately into the Netherlands, where Saint Nicholas from the Greek got translated into Dutch as Sinterklaas. Kind of sounds like it, doesn't it? And then when many Dutchmen and women immigrated to the United States, Sinterklaas got transliterated into English as Santa Claus. Saint Nicholas, patron saint of children. Kind of cool to know where these things come from, isn't it? And kind of cool to know that both Saint Nicholas and the wise men were inspired to their incredible generosity because of Jesus Christ. And so, throughout the ages, we who follow Jesus, in imitation of the wise men and Saint Nicholas, in honor of Jesus, have been giving and receiving gifts on Christmas. Beautiful gifts. Gifts from the heart. If you really love your spouse or your teenager, you give a Lexus or a drum set. If you don't, it's some dumb old book called The Meaning of Dreams. But all of us, are you feeling loved this morning? Have you opened your presents? All of us love to give and receive gifts on Christmas. As Jesus himself once said, freely you have received, freely give. But here's the thing about Christmas. On Christmas, we often forget to give a gift to the very one who is the reason for the day, the one whose birthday we celebrate. If Jesus is just a figment of our imagination, then it would make sense to go through the Christmas season and Christmas Day as if Jesus does not exist and just celebrate it as a cultural holiday. But if Jesus is a real being, now dwelling in heaven, someone with whom we can have a relationship, a close personal relationship, supportive, intimate, powerful, then wouldn't it make sense on Christmas Day to offer Jesus a gift that would be profoundly meaningful to him? But what do you get for somebody who literally already has everything? If Jesus made out a Christmas list, what might be at the top of that list? Peace on earth. Did you read my sermon in advance? Because that's exactly where I'm headed with this. Think about it. What would Jesus... You are brilliant. Brilliant child. What? Her leg is injured, but her heart and mind are fully intact. What might Jesus most want for a present on Christmas? Remember the great prophecy of Jesus' birth back in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, told us that he would be the Prince of Peace. Remember what the angels called out to the shepherds announcing Jesus' birth: peace on earth. Peace on earth, goodwill among people. Jesus, in his own ministry, told us, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. He went on to say in Matthew 5:23, when you're offering your gift at the altar to God, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go first. Be reconciled to your brother or sister, then come and offer your gift. In other words, the gift that Jesus would most want from us is that we would be peacemakers, that we would seek reconciliation with those with whom we may be at odds in our life. Truly, I tell you, Jesus said, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. It seems that we could offer Jesus no better, more perfect gift than to seek to reach out in peace to someone with whom we are at odds. Who comes to mind for you? And what would it look like for you to reach out in gestures of peace and kindness to approach that broken or torn relationship with a positive attitude meant to transform it? As an anonymous person once said, a positive attitude will not necessarily solve all your problems, but it will annoy enough people to make it worth the effort. So what would it look like for you to reach out in peace to someone that you are at odds with in your extended family, in your neighborhood, in your circle of friends, in your workplace, maybe even here in this congregation? Who is God calling to your mind, and what would it look like for you to reach out to that person in peace if you will offer Jesus that gift on this Christmas day? That would mean more to him than a new Lexus or a set of drums. I promised you that as my gift to you today on this Christmas, I would present to you the briefest sermon I've ever preached, and so I'm going to keep that promise. Merry Christmas. So let me close with this. It's a true story, a story like the one that I shared with you about St. Nicholas from the writings of Father Glenn MacDonald. This story is about the recently retired Archbishop of Galilee. Can you imagine ministering in Galilee where Jesus was raised as a child? The recently retired Archbishop of Galilee is named Elias Chakor. He describes himself as a Palestinian Arab Christian Israeli. Three different times he's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize because he's devoted his 43-plus year career as archbishop to making peace among people that are often at each other's throats. But he says his greatest peacemaking challenge came when, as a young man, he received his first assignment as a priest in the Diocese of Galilee. He was assigned to a congregation in Ibilin, a small town in Galilee, to a congregation that was literally at each other's throats. Factions, arguments, grudges that had been nursed over the decades. It was a provisional assignment because nobody was sure, could he do it? Could anybody do it? In fact, the first person from his congregation that greeted him, Father Elias, it's hard to say, I keep wanting to say Elias, Elias said, the first person in his congregation that greeted him said, get out of here, we don't want you. But he hung in there, determined with the idealism of youth to make a difference. 18 months into his tenure, the low point came. He was called to the home of one of his parishioners, a police officer in Abilene, named Abu Muhib. His mother was near death. And so Father Elias suggested to Abu, you might want to summon your three brothers. No, Abu said. They are not allowed to set foot in my house. I hate them. If they were to come into this house, you'd have five funerals on your hands. Soon thereafter, it was Palm Sunday. As Father Elias looked out at the congregation, it was filled. It was a high holy day. All these people hating each other, but doing their religious duty on this high holy day. Sitting front and center, he said, was Abu Muhib and his family. And the other three quadrants of the church, as far away as possible, his three brothers and their families. He says it was a listless, lifeless service. People going through the motions of religion. The singing was lifeless. The sermon, though he gave it his best, was uninspired. At the end of the service, he decided he had nothing to lose. He was going to try something daring. And so, per usual, he stepped to the back of the sanctuary to give the benediction. After the benediction, he turned and he put chains around the exit doors and padlocked them. He walked back to the front of the sanctuary, looked at his stunned congregation, and he spoke these words. Sitting in this building does not make you a Christian. You are a people divided against each other. You argue and hate each other. What do others think when they see you? If you can't love your brother that you see, how can you say you love God who's invisible? But there is someone who can bring you together in true unity. His name is Jesus Christ. He is the one who can give you power to forgive. So now, I will be quiet and allow him to give you that power. If you will not forgive, we will stay locked in here. You can kill each other and I'll provide your funerals free. He stood there in stony silence, a silence, the tension so thick it could be cut with a knife, people glaring back at him. 3 minutes passed, nothing. 5 minutes passed, nothing. 10 minutes, nothing. Just when Father Elias was about to give up, who would stand up but Abu Muhib? He turned and faced the congregation and said, I'm sorry. I'm the worst of all. Tears in his eyes, he hung his head. I've hated my own brothers. Hated them so much I wanted to kill them. More than any of you, I need forgiveness. And then turning to Father Elias, he said, can you forgive me too, Father? Father Elias and Abu embraced. Abu's three brothers raced to the front. They all embraced. Before long, Father Elias says, the entire congregation broke into the chaos of embracing and forgiving, and people who had not spoken for decades reconciling. And for the next hour, the next solid hour, he says, we spontaneously sang together in worship before spilling out into the streets of Abilene to share that spirit. And Jesus wept for joy. How about us? Who's God laying on your heart this morning? Someone with whom you've been at odds. If you would be so moved to reach out in peace to that person, let me suggest three simple practical steps. Number one, begin with simple gestures of kindness to change the atmosphere around that relationship. Number two, start regularly praying for that person. And then number three, when the time feels right, when the groundwork has been laid, initiate open, direct, honest conversations with that person meant to clear the air. Because you see, forgiving and peacemaking is not about denying that there are problems in a relationship that need to be worked through. If we just gloss over and pretend to forgive without talking and working through the problems, then the harmony restored will again break down soon. Peacemaking means going through the hard work of negotiating, of having open, direct conversation. It doesn't work every time. The other person may not be ready to make peace, but we can each do our part. And when we do our part, we are offering Jesus the most beautiful possible gift. Do that, and you might just hear ringing down from heaven today a scream as Jesus discovers your gift like a child, a five-year-old, discovering a drum set. Jesus, this is our gift of love to you, our birthday present with you. I invite you all here to say with me in your heart, on this Christmas, Jesus, my gift to you is a promise to reach out in peace to, and then fill in the blank as you are led. Our Christmas present to Jesus. Amen.